Welcome to That's Not How a Baby Sleeps, the podcast where parenting meets hilarity. I'm your host, Alicia Daishon, and I've got the fantastic Eleni Katsinis as my co-conspirator in all things baby and toddler sleep. We're not your average sleep consultants, no cry it out nonsense or sleep training at all for that matter.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
Oh, you know, just wiping boogers and wiping boogers.
Is she sick?
Well, yeah, she's had that cold, you know, since last, like, weekend. And then she was fine, but I feel like the boogers are getting, like, progressively worse throughout each day. Like, just more mucus is draining out of her. I don't know how it's possible for such a small human. But, of course, I just called the nurse. I'm like, is this normal? They're like, yeah, it's normal. Like, don't worry. It should last, like, 2 to 3 weeks. I'm like, 2 to 3 weeks? It's been, like, a week and a half, and...
Oh my gosh.
It's normal to last 2 to 3 weeks. So okay. If it goes past that, then it might be like a sinus infection, but it's just like a lot of mucus. She's very happy and like fine.
I was going to ask if she's been complaining or if it's been bothering her, if she's just her usual self.
Nope. She's has more energy than ever. It's just us being stuck home. Cause I don't want to bring a snotty kid out, you know?
Oh my goodness. No, I usually when like the girls get sick, Lane will be immediately like, we have to give them something. Like, I'm like, no, I'm like, this is nice. They're like quiet, kind of docile. They're snuggling with me. Like if I give them any type of medication, they're just going to act normal. And yeah, I don't want that. So I will enjoy the sickness. It's okay. But yeah, we had a really another late night with Luna last night. She was up until like 11:30 because she napped until 20 after two. So and then because it's not spring break anymore, I had to get her up at like her normal time at like 7:20. I think she got up and she was just absolutely miserable all morning. So I dropped her off. I was like, here you go. She was up until almost midnight. So enjoy. And maybe you'll not nap for so long today. So
it's like they're just going to keep repeating the same cycle if they like don't cap that nap. You know, it's like, well, they're extra tired, so I let them sleep longer. Yep. Like, no, you don't understand my child. They need to wake up from this.
My
nap.
Child, like, it's not normal. And I'm starting to get worried about like just the changes in bedtime because the night before last, she was in bed for like 9 o'clock. So I don't know. I'm like worried about circadian rhythms and stuff now. I don't know. It's just a whole thing. So I'm still considering like picking her up early, but that cuts my work day in half. So we'll see. I know it's just temporary. Yeah. It's just a temporary thing right
it's
now.
Just a phase. Just a phase. Keep telling yourself like that myself over and over again.
While I'm twitching at 11 o'clock at night and she's just running around. Because that's like, that's the thing is she, if she is tired, she will go to sleep no problem. But she's not tired. But yeah, let's talk about normal infant sleep in the first year, not in toddler years,
we'll
which
to
is what
way.
We usually deal with. But we will do another episode on normal toddler sleep. But we thought it would be a really good idea to do one on just normal infant sleep in the first year. There are a lot of misconceptions around what is normal and what that looks like in the first year. So every child is so different. So what might be completely normal for 1 6-month-old who may be sleeping through the night, it's also completely normal for another, honestly, most 6-month-olds to be waking multiple times a night. So two things can be true at the same time, but there's definitely some red flags that we do want to watch out for. And we also asked our community online to send in some questions about what is normal in that first year. So we've kind of included that in these things that we're going to chat about today. But a lot of the time we do like to really compare our children to other babies. And I think that can lead parents having some really unrealistic expectations and really feeling the need to sleep train because their child's not sleeping through the night. I think it's pretty rare that we see children sleeping through the night in the first year, unless they have been sleep trained. So there are often fears that their children will suffer developmentally. We can assure you that's not the case. It's actually really, really normal for babies who are developing to wake up a lot more. It's the main cause for the lack of sleep consolidation in the first year, along with like teething and separation anxiety, of course. And we prefer to call those bouts of developmental progressions as opposed to sleep regressions to kind of make you feel a little bit better. But essentially your child is progressing in development and it's affecting their sleep. Unfortunately, when we don't really understand our children's unique sleep needs, it can feel like the first year is just a giant sleep regression. And these normal infant sleep hiccups tend to really just layer on top of each other. And then when things settle down, you're still struggling with sleep because your child is not set up for optimal sleep. So that's something that Eleni and I focus heavily on with the clients that we work with. Do you want to talk about normal sleep in the newborn days? I think that's a good place to start. Start from
the beginning. For sure. Especially because right now my sister just had her baby not too long ago. So she's asking me all the questions. It was so funny. I didn't tell you this, but she was texting me like, she hates her bassinet. I'm like, I know, that's very normal. And I was just giving her some tips and she goes, oh, thanks for the tips. Like, where do I send the money? I'm like, oh, shut up. it was just funny though. I'm like, it's just cool to like help my, you know, one of the people I love most, my sister, with like newborn stuff, because I haven't had a newborn in so long. But young children are not wired for separation from an attachment aspect. So they feed very frequently day and night. And this is what I was talking to my sister about. They have day and night confused sometimes. So they might be like sleeping all day long and up all night. I feel like that kind of subsides unless you start like trying to wake up more to feed them. I know it's difficult. So we want to aim for about 10 to 12 feeds over a 24-hour period. You may be experiencing growth spurts or periods of cluster feeding. If you are breastfeeding in the early days, your supply is hormone driven. So eventually around the 6 to 8 week mark, things shift to supply on demand. So if you are going long periods without nursing, this can impact supply. So that's something to be mindful of. So definitely on demand, right? Like how many times have we been told by doctors or other advice? Like I remember when I was in the hospital, I had different lactation specialists tell me different things. So I was so confused. I was like, one said to feed every 2 to 3 hours and don't like feed before that. So like at the first night we took Nora home, she's screaming, crying after like the 2 hour mark or maybe like an hour and a half of like feeding. Yeah. And I was like, what do I do? Like I already fed her. I have to wait until like the 2 to 3 hour mark. I can't feed her again. Cause that's what I was told in my head. So let me call the night nurse and she goes, you can feed her. She's probably hungry. And I was like,
can you imagine the calls that they get like regularly because they've been told, parents have been told, new different information that really is not, it's not ideal. And they're not following their instincts because they're, you know, following these set schedules. It's the same thing with eat, play, sleep, feed, awake, sleep. Yeah. That it might work in the early days for some babies, but we actually have seen issues, especially as like wake windows start to extend, where mom's supply will actually plummet because they're so stressed out about the schedule and then, you know, times between feeds, especially, you know, if we're looking at wake windows extending to like 2-3 hours, that's going to put a pretty big gap between feeds. And if we're still aiming for those 10 to 12 feeds over a 24 hour, it will affect your supply. And the same thing goes for if your newborn does start sleeping really long stretches, like it that is normal for some babies. It's not something to be concerned about, but you still want to be kind of be mindful of the amount of feeds that you're offering over a 24-hour period for sure.
So with newborn naps, they are napping, you know, 4 to 6 times a day, waking every 2 hours at night, or sometimes maybe even less or more, like you just said. And then some newborns will take nice long naps and some will only take 20 to 30 minute naps. That's not something that you need to fix. We actually rarely see much of in the way of nap consolidation prior to like 6 to 7 months. So, and they will be woken up from that starter reflex. Some families will choose to swaddle to avoid this. However, it's okay to skip the swaddle. We actually recommend if your baby can sleep a couple hours without it, just to have that free movement. And the more they startle, that reflex goes away faster. You're going to have that problem with the transition of the swaddle later on in like 3-4 months. When do you usually see this transition out of the swaddle? Obviously when they start rolling, but I guess that could be different for every baby. So we would just recommend you could just skip it altogether just to avoid that. Honestly, I mean, they're going to start a little bit and then it's going to wear off faster.
I find that it does wear off a lot quicker when we don't use it. It's so hard because a lot of parents are told from day one, like you need to swaddle them. We actually in Canada, they don't recommend it anymore.
Oh, really? Well, they swaddle the baby right out of the hospital. I mean, as soon as you birth the baby, they take it, they clean it up, you swaddle it up really tight, and then you're given back and they're always in the swaddle. It's so funny, I was at the hospital with my sister and the baby was swaddled. She's trying to like nurse her in the swaddle. I'm like, no, like unswaddle her, like make sure her hands are free. She has to like touch your breast, manipulate the milk. She goes, what? But she's cold. I'm like, she won't, she'll be good on your body. You know, your body.
Yeah, she's getting that body heat. It'll be fine.
I feel like a lot of moms do have that misconception of swaddling. Like they need to swaddle for sleep, you know, for deep sleep. And that's what we don't want in the newborn stage, right? We don't want that super deep sleep like right away, because we do want them waking to feed.
Yeah, it's normal for them to be waking up, you know, relatively frequently. But parents do want, they're like, oh, I'm tired. They're tired. They want more sleep, but that startle reflex is, it's there for safety. It is important that it is there. It is normal for them to wake up at night. It is protective against SIDS. And I think that's why in Canada, they're kind of like leaning towards not recommending swaddling. With Aylin, she was sensitive. So we didn't swaddle in the first few days and she didn't sleep at all. So we did use a swaddle with Aylin, and then with Luna, I think she was maybe swaddled a couple times, like maybe for a picture. And then one night I remember she had like, she was kind of gassy and had an upset stomach. So I swaddled her like one, maybe two nights. And then it was just so much easier to transition out of it. So you can avoid it and have a baby that is like, I'll sleep okay without it, then you don't need to do it. It's not necessary, because eventually you're going to have to transition out of it around that, you know, once they start rolling. Sometimes depending on your child and development, that can correlate with that 4-month developmental progression where sleep is just falling apart anyways. And it can make the whole situation even messier than it needs to be, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. So with newborn sleep as well, you're going to experience more fussiness as their stimulus barrier wears off. So this tends to peak around the 6-week mark, and it commonly is known as the witching hour. It's so funny thinking back to Nora's 6-week mark. I remember she was up like one day, all day. I swear she did not sleep. Maybe like a second here and there. And I call a nurse. I'm like, I don't know what's wrong with her. She's not sleeping. Yeah. And they're like, that's normal. She's having a huge growth spurt. And she just like nursed all day. And the next day she slept like all day. It was like the weirdest thing.
Miserable? Or was she okay?
She wasn't miserable. She was so happy, because then I learned that she's a low sleep needs baby. So it's like she did. It's not like she didn't sleep all day. She dozed here and there, but she didn't sleep as long as I obviously would think that she should at that stage. You know, it's like you should be napping for a long time. You shouldn't be up like most of the day. I was just so confused.
It's very confusing for sure. And like I don't remember with Aylin if we experienced a witching hour. I feel like her whole first few months was a witching hour. But with Luna, we noticed it right. My mom came and stayed with us for like a week or so. And I was like, just to kind of play with Aylin and stuff. And I was like, okay, like you can go. Like it was just so much easier the second time around. I think if I was to have another one, I would want her to come around that like 4-6 week mark, because that's when things got really, really difficult. I was like spending hours just driving around trying to get Luna to sleep, and like Googling everything and worried that she had reflux, that like something was wrong. But she was so happy during the day. It was just like around 5 o'clock, she would be just crying and miserable until 10 o'clock and wouldn't sleep though, like so excessively overtired. It was just an absolute nightmare. And then I feel it just like stopped.
That, yeah, that's, and that's what it should, obviously. I feel like there's a misconception around the witching hour too. Like I remember someone I knew, their baby was going through the witching hour, and they're just like, oh yeah, they're just like going through the witching hours, like pretty much saying like there's nothing they can really do and they're just going to go through it. But I feel like there's a reasoning behind the witching hours, right? Like
a lot of the time,
the growth spurt, like their cluster feeding and all that stuff's going on. So it's just like the same thing with colic. Like colic, there's a reason behind colic. They're not just colic, you know, like, it's like witching hours, the same type of thing, like understanding why that's happening and how to like,
and I think a lot of it too, with another reason that can kind of happen is it's like, it's usually happening towards the end of the day where they've gone through, you know, they've had a ton of stimulation throughout the day. Mm-hmm. And then it's just kind of catching up with them. Another thing too, is if you're breastfeeding, your supply starts to dip right around in the evening, like it's at its lowest, and that's where you'll kind of see those cluster feeds happening as well. So there's usually reasons for it. If your child's entire life seems like a witching hour, there's probably an underlying reason, and we'll go into red flags and stuff with sleep a little bit later on. But yeah, no fun at all. I just got in the bath with her for hours. That was like, that's my number one tip for witching hours.
Water, or even like outside motion, right? If it's nice out, take them for a walk, take them for a car ride. Like it's not fun just to sit there and rock your baby for hours. So definitely get out and do something if you can.
Yeah, for sure.
But with newborns, it is, they need support going to sleep. And although some newborns will go down drowsy but awake due to the maternal melatonin, and or if they're very easygoing temperament wise, but this tends to change as they get older. Just like with my daughter, she was very easygoing temperament before that 4 month mark. Yeah. And then after that, I knew that she was not. She was very sensitive.
Totally. Yeah. I didn't. Ayla never went down drowsy but awake ever. Luna did in the newborn stages. And I was like, oh, she's so easygoing. And then now here we are. We're still laying with both of them while they go to sleep. So very normal for young children to still need help falling asleep. Let's talk about 4 months. So this is where things get a little bit yucky. Usually there is a permanent change in sleep cycles around this stage. And as obviously it's not going to happen exactly at 4 months. I mean, some babies, it will happen exactly at 4 months, but we've seen it earlier around 3 months. It just kind of depends on the child. During the day, these sleep cycles become 30-ish, 40 minutes or so, maybe 45 minutes. And then overnight, they're usually about an hour. So you might start to experience wake ups every 1 to 2 hours overnight. Sometimes more frequently, depending on how your child was sleeping. I find it pretty common with newborns who were sleeping like a nice 6 hour stretch for mom previously. They tend to be the ones that start waking every 2 hours overnight. The ones that always woke up every 2 hours, it seems like it's kind of every hour with them. So it's definitely a struggle. We definitely recommend it's just pure survival mode. Knowing that it will pass is kind of helpful, but when you're in the middle of it, it's very difficult to manage. So they might struggle to stay asleep with previous sleep associations. They're a lot more aware of their surroundings, and that might make sleep more difficult to achieve. They might be going through developmental milestones. As we mentioned, they might be starting to roll. So you might start to see longer wake ups in the middle of the night. They're going to continue to eat at night and even go through growth spurts, usually around that 4 month mark. This is usually when parents are told that they need to sleep train and made to believe that they are doing something wrong by supporting their child to sleep. I know in my initial sleep certification, this was like the recommendation is like 4 months, you start sleep training using one of these methods. If you don't sleep train, your child will sleep like this for the rest of their life, which we know is completely false.
True. Yes. And I was told that as well. And so I know that's obviously not true.
Yeah. You tried it around 4 months for a nap.
Yes. Which I guess is, you know, I don't know how you're supposed to sleep train. Are you supposed to start with the nap, or you're supposed to sleep at nighttime? Is
there like... talk to?
Yeah, that makes sense.
But yeah, as we mentioned, it is pure survival mode at this point in time. Do whatever you need to do to kind of get through, as long as you're doing it as safely as possible. We do have a free 4 month survival guide that we will link in the show notes below.
Well, let's talk about normal infant sleep through 6 to 12 months. So they'll be going through a lot of developmental milestones, sitting, crawling, pulling up to stand, cruising around furniture, walking. They do have those long wake ups at night. Just keep the lights dim, keep everything quiet, and let them like move around. Don't just sit there and rock your baby for a long period of time, because you're going to get stressed. Baby will get stressed. It's just not worth it. So that really does. It is a waste of time. And that really does diminish the wake up. And then obviously practice those skills a lot throughout the day to help at nighttime.
It just gets extra energy out too.
Yep, exactly. So they will have increased nighttime stretches if you're able to nail down unique sleep needs to optimize nighttime sleep. It's common to see a longer initial stretch at sleep at the beginning of the night and shorter stretches as the night goes on due to the drop in sleep pressure. So from about 4 or 5 a.m., really light state of sleep. So if something's off during the day from a foundations aspect, it's going to really magnify this drop in sleep pressure, and your child may struggle to stay asleep. So we see lots of early morning snuggles to stay asleep, and or really, really frequent wake ups early morning.
Yeah, that's really, really common. And that was one of the questions that we got. There was a mom who was asking about, is it normal for my child to need snuggles early morning to stay asleep? It can be normal if they are not set up for optimal sleep. And a lot of the time we'll see that, you know, if they are getting too much daytime sleep, they're overtired before going to bed, or possibly undertired. So taking a look at your daytime sleep totals and or your last wake window can really help to diminish the frequent wake ups early morning. We do have a freebie, the early bird guide that we will attach as well in the show notes below, that talks a little bit more about dealing with kind of this restlessness early morning. Even if they're not fully waking up, they're still staying in a really light state of sleep early morning. We want to address why that's happening.
Exactly. And I feel like so many moms we talk to are so afraid of an overtired baby that they're putting their kids down very undertired. So
they have number one thing I see sleep trainers recommend. It's like, they're just, I swear, they just push all of these methods and then just tell everyone that their babies are overtired.
When they're usually not, they're probably undertired because you're trying, you're trying to put them down at 7 o'clock because that's what you're supposed to do, but they're really maybe better with a 9 o'clock bedtime. So that's just all about the unique sleep needs. So around this time, you want to continue to, they're going to want to continue to eat at night. So often by 9 months, a solid intake is going well and daytime milk intake is good. It's realistic to go 4 hours between night feeds. If they are distracted during daytime feeds, they tend to equal more nighttime feeds. So starting solids is a huge change in digestion and can often lead to discomfort, and it is a common sleep disruption. So separation anxiety peaks at 6 months, 9 to 10 months, and 12 months. So we recommend more contact, closeness, and connection during separation anxiety peaks.
Absolutely. Yeah, you never want to kind of curb separation anxiety with more separation. It doesn't work.
Exactly.
More contact, more closeness, more connection. And I mean, it can be hard because a lot of moms who especially are home with their little ones all day, they're like, I'm with them all day long. Like, why are they having separation anxiety? And a lot of it has to do with like the ages, like right around 6 months is kind of where person object permanence is just starting to develop. So when you leave a room, they're more aware of that. But they don't really understand that, you know, you still exist fully at that point in time. So it can make the separation anxiety really, really spike up around that time. They also develop a preference to one specific caregiver, usually the primary caregiver. So we see lots of separation anxiety with mom, and it's really common for the other caregiver to struggle at that point in time. You might have been totally fine putting your little one to bed until they were 6 months old, and then suddenly they only want mom, which is, it's hard for the other caregiver for sure.
Yeah, that's really hard. I remember reading something about 9 months of age, a baby realizes that they are not the same person as their mom. They thought they've gone their whole life thinking mom and I are one person. And then they realize, oh, you're not one person with me. We're different people and you can be apart from me. So I feel like that's a huge spike, like you said, in separation anxiety.
There's a huge, huge shift in development around 9 months. We've been told that babies are technically born. Human babies are born premature. So for like that first 9 months, they don't see themselves as a separate being. They are fully attached to mom. Which is tricky because most moms are going back to work at 6 weeks old. So it's very confusing.
I know that's so hard, but like we said, just more contact, closest connection. And I feel like the more you try to like make them independent, like the more they're going to push back. Like you want to like bring them in and have them fully depend so they can have that natural independence later on.
It will happen. You're not doing anything wrong by adding that extra connection. It dependence breeds true independence. So
exactly. And never to make moms feel bad, but I always want, like you just said, like, oh, I'm with my baby all day long. Like, why do they have separation anxiety from me? I really want you to think about what you are doing with your child. Cause I say this too, but then like, am I fully present with Nora all day long? No way I'm not. Like I'm on my phone. I work for my phone. I work for my laptop. Like I'm doing the dishes. I'm doing that. Like, am I fully present sitting there with her? No. And like, that's what they need. They need that fully present moment of that connection time. And like I said, I'm not trying to make anyone feel bad. We all get it. We're all there.
We both do it all the time.
We do it all the time. And then she's whining and she's clinging to me. I'm like, leave me alone. Why are you doing it's this? Like, I was just with you all day long. But I'm like, okay, I need to calm down. I understand why this is happening. I need to put my phone away and then we'll have our connection time.
And it just makes things so much easier. Like when you actually do focus on that connection, like it might not seem like it's going to do anything because you feel like you're there with them all the time, but that extra one-to-one connection time is so, so beneficial. And when we look at sleep, like children are not wired for separation at all. So 12 hours, 10 to 12 hours, depending on your child's sleep needs, away from their primary caregiver overnight is separation to them. It's the ultimate separation, and we see so many bedtime battles around it, and it's something that we've experienced with Luna as well, and like, and with her all the time. Why is she being so annoying and won't go to bed? But really focusing on that connection time with her, it really does work wonders. Didn't last night, but that was a whole other situation.
Yeah. I know, it really does help. So like we said, we usually see nap consolidation around the 6 to 7 month mark, but if we aren't seeing that, it's often due to awake windows being off. So we'll see struggling with nighttime wake ups, short naps, early morning wake ups due to teething pain. So it's still completely normal to need help falling asleep. This does not affect the child's ability to connect sleep cycles. If your child has ever slept more than an hour past 4 months, they have connected a sleep cycle just fine. If your child is struggling to connect sleep cycles or is waking every 2 hours, it is an issue with the foundations, unless, of course, they're going through a progression, teething, separation anxiety, etc., illness, discomfort, absolutely, like whatever is going on.
Yeah, for sure. That was a question that we got, is it normal that my child needs help connecting sleep cycles every 2 hours? And if they are not, like we just mentioned, if they're sleeping more than an hour, they are connecting the sleep cycle. The majority of the time we see wake ups every 2 hours is because of those foundations and just not being set up for optimal sleep. Usually I will say that the wake ups every 2 hours tend to be an under tired situation. So looking at your daytime sleep totals and your last wake window to see if you can get a little bit more consolidation overnight. A lot of parents are following like age appropriate wake windows that may or may not work for their child, and they're scared of, you know, having an overtired child, so they're really scared of experimenting. We always recommend experimenting with wake windows in short little 15-minute increments so that you can figure out what the sweet spot is. We do have a free wake window sleep science guide that I put in the show notes as well if you need help with that. You will notice that the wake window ranges are quite vast compared to most sleep consultants' suggestions, but you can kind of start to experiment within those ranges and see if you can get a little bit more consolidation at night.
And I feel like that's a question we get asked a lot too, is like, how do I make my baby connect sleep cycles? Like you just said, they're sleeping more than an hour, but what else helps connect sleep cycles for a baby? That they're safe, right? And comfortable and secure. All their needs are met physically and emotionally, and they're set for optimal sleep. Like that's how they'll connect sleep cycles. Yeah.
And I think being comfortable in your sleep environment, that's a huge one. A lot of sleep trainers will push, like, don't let your baby play in their crib, because then they're going to think it's for playtime and not for sleep, which is just absolute ludicrous. Like, your child needs to release endorphins in the sleep space to feel safe enough to sleep there and connect those sleep cycles, or they're going to keep waking. But again, like, most sleep trainers are hyper-focused on your child falling asleep independently. So, and they might not even be set up for optimal sleep. So when you put them in the crib, they're just sitting there playing. Most of our clients will support their children fully asleep and then just transfer them. So it's never really an issue. Let's talk a little bit just about like biologically normal infant sleep, because obviously we've kind of talked a little bit about what you can expect in that first year, but there are some biological norms at play here. So it is technically biologically normal for a baby to rouse every couple of hours overnight and quickly resettle with a feed. This is in no way concerning. It's completely okay from a developmental standpoint if it works for your family. But we understand that, you know, it might not be realistic for your child to be waking every 2 hours overnight until they're 12 months old, especially with, I'm in Canada, we have normal maternity leave. You guys don't have normal maternity leave in the States. So we like to really focus on figuring out those unique sleep needs to help families get more consolidation, especially for that beginning part of the night. And then, you know, reduce the wake ups as much as we can for that second half of the night. It is also biologically normal for your baby to want to sleep with you. Whether that's bed sharing or room sharing, both are normal and fine if they work for your family. We get that that may not work for your family, and that's okay to make a parent-led change by nailing down your child's unique wake windows, manipulating the daytime sleep a little bit to optimize nighttime sleep. I know everyone says, don't wake a sleeping baby. We wake sleeping babies all the time to get us more sleep overnight. And it's also okay to shift the sleep environment. We're actually hosting a webinar on April 5th that covers the bed sharing transition. Again, we'll link that below in the show notes if you are interested in signing up. But we're also going to be covering making changes around contact naps in that webinar as well. So let's talk a little bit about just red flags and what's not normal. We did get a question about, like, is it normal to have hourly wake-ups for a short period of time? Yes. During progressions, bouts of teething, that is normal. But if it's been your norm consistently for months on end, there's usually an underlying reason. So some common red flags to investigate include mouth breathing, snoring, gassiness, reflux. The reflux will often come with, you'll notice, like, clicking while feeding. That's your child taking in air, and that will lead to gassiness or reflux. There's only two ways for that air to go, up or down. And it can happen with breast or bottle. So we'll also see food sensitivities, eczema, tongue ties. Low iron is one of the big ones. By about 6 months, your child uses up the majority of the iron stores that they got from you in utero. How many clients do we have on iron right now?
Four, I think it is,
and we're just on pause with them right now and waiting for that iron to go up, but we've already kind of checked in with a few of them and we've already seen improvements with sleep. So that can lead to really restless sleep, hourly wake-ups, or even more frequently, difficulty settling at bedtime. It's a huge, huge reason that we introduce solids at 6 months, because those iron stores start to get depleted and why we focus on iron rich foods. I think in the States, usually it's pretty standard to check iron around 12 months. But if you are concerned, and if you've had issues with iron in your own pregnancy, it's a lot more likely that that's going to happen. So it might be ideal to kind of get iron checked earlier on. Another red flag is a child that will not sleep on their back. This is definitely a little bit concerning. It can be airway related. It's also common with babies who have oral ties. And then reflux babies will also really struggle to sleep on their back. I'm a huge advocate for getting to the root cause of reflux as opposed to just throwing medication at it. Obviously, there are some cases where the child truly does have GERB. But there are a lot of situations where the reflux is a symptom of something else. So the first thing we always recommend doing is having a feeding assessment done, both bottle or breast, to ensure there's nothing going on there. It can be an issue with oral ties. The child's just, again, not latching properly to the bottle or breast and taking in air, causing that reflux. So yes, you can throw meds on top of that, but the issue is still there. If we're talking about newborns and colic, we mentioned this a little bit earlier, it is a symptom. We need to dive deeper. It's not a diagnosis. It's not something that you just have to accept and just deal with. But we also see issues with, like, food sensitivities, things like that, that will be related to colic. So diving deeper into any of those medical concerns, that might be the reason your child is colicky. And another question we had, if your baby is waking up screaming at every single wake up and they seem uncomfortable or restless, this is definitely a red flag. There are, of course, some children who are just not morning people. We were talking about this yesterday, and they might wake up a little bit cranky, and it could be a phase or just a temperament trait. Not everyone loves getting up in the morning. So if they aren't really uncomfortable and they kind of snap out of it shortly after, it's definitely not an area that we would be concerned about. Remember that your child is unique, as is their sleep. What may be normal for one child may not be for another. It's important to always tune into your child to determine what works best for them. Thanks for joining us. Don't forget to connect with us beyond the podcast. You can find myself on all social media platforms at Alicia Dyshon. And for more parenting and sleepy goodness, hop over to Instagram and follow Eleni at Eleni Cats. Until next week, keep embracing the chaos and remember, you're doing an amazing job, even if it doesn't feel like it.